Harold Bloom, I'd love to take a kind of modern walk with Ralph Waldo Emerson. Of course, I've read you and I know your devotion,
As you know, the sacred Emerson's usual walking companions were either Nathaniel Hawthorne, of whom Emerson gently complained they never said a word to one another as they walked there in Concord, or Henry David Thoreau, who in one of his letters, no, actually it's in his journal, says, "My relationship with Waldo is one long tragedy." And in his journals, Emerson remarked, "When I'm out walking with Henry Thoreau, I would as soon think of taking his arm as I would in reaching up and grasping a branch of a tree." My closest friend in this life for 30 years, from the day he was first my student to the time when, as baseball commissioner, he suddenly died, was Angelo Bartlett Giamatti. We quarreled perpetually about Emerson, as so many people and I have quarreled perpetually. And Bart, one day, when I was complaining that people had this absurd notion that Emerson was sweet, said, "Sweet, Harold? He was as sweet as barbed wire," which is, I think, quite true. He was not particularly sweet.
Let's begin at the beginning. What fascinates me is why we care about Emerson today. What is the modern meaning of trust thyself, the infinitude of the private man, Emerson's devotion to the idea of spirit in nature, all that self-reliance? What's the modern meaning of all that? And who are the modern Emersonians?
Well, it has split in half, as you know, Chris. There are Emersonians of the left and Emersonians of the right. Directly contemporary with one another were John Dewey, an Emersonian of the left, and the first Henry Ford, publisher in the United States of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, who was of the Emersonian right and who had signs from self-reliance plastered all over the Ford motor plant. And this is something which goes on until this day. You could at the moment argue that on the one hand, my very dear old friend Richard Rorty, the post-pragmatic philosopher, is our leading living Emersonian. And yet you could argue in another sense that the horrible Cheney or the horrible Rummy, though they wouldn't know it, of course, are our leading Emersonians because they seem to be acting exactly on the principles of the conduct of life.
Where does Rumsfeld or Cheney connect with Emerson or anything he spoke about?
If you look at what he has to say about power in the essay called Power, he absolutely refuses to make even the slightest moral judgment or evaluation of the whole question of power.
It's true. In that essay on power, there's a celebration of hardheads, of something like thuggery, of the dominant...
Of what he calls the bruisers. In that piece I wrote for The Guardian in London, I said he could be talking about the oligarchic and plutocratic gang who are currently running the United States, you know, the bruisers, W, Cheney, Rummy, and the whole horrible gang, Ashcroft, and so on. And though himself a permanent man of the left, Emerson nevertheless says that of the those who are trying to oppose them, he says, he shakes his head and says, they're just sniveling. And that, I'm afraid, is very much where we are now in this country.
But he also says,
I pray that General Clark is going to save us from all this.
He says in that essay that those people know the crimes that...
They know exactly how much crime the people will bear.
Yes.
And it remains absolutely true. We have the most blatantly corrupt and crooked administration in our entire history. Look, let us not forget, I was up on the stage of the 92nd Street Y in New York back in April, and somebody in the audience asked a question about Emerson, and I laughed cheerfully and said, not only did he hate the South, and there's a great deal more to be said about that, and would he have been very unhappy indeed about what currently has happened in the United States, where the Southern Republican Party has taken over the entire country, but he ferociously opposed the admission of Texas into the Union, prophesying accurately that it would destroy the United States.
Mm. He also called his house in Concord Bush. That was the name of the family house,
yes,
whatever that proves.
I think, though, it has nothing to do with our current, rather degenerate Bushes. His relationship to everything that comes after him in this country is so multiform, so various, so much across the board, that it is almost impossible to summarize. The one thing about it which I can say, which is absolutely clear, and I base this on my own personal experience, every Southern American I have ever known, including Southern literary men, poets, and novelists, and critics who were close personal friends, have hated Emerson with a ferocity which is almost unbelievable. And of course, he would have more than returned the compliment. It actually started back in the days when he and Poe were having at one another, and he permanently and wonderfully dismissed Poe as the jingle man. But the late Robert Penn Warren, who was a very dear personal friend, for perhaps 7 years in a row, once a week, before I went off to give my graduate seminar and Red went to, across the way to the library to do research, Red and I would have lunch in Maury's. And for 7 years, we fought like cats and dogs, drinking a great deal in the process, of course, about Emerson. He assured me on more than one occasion that Emerson was the devil. And I finally said, Red, what do you mean? You don't literally think that he was Satan. You have no theological beliefs whatsoever. He said, I'm almost persuaded to have some. He was so diabolic. He then wrote a poem, which he specifically said he had directed against me, called Reading Emerson on a Night Flight to New York, in which one line rather bitterly snaps, at 50,000 feet, Emerson is dead right. Red Warren's first book was called John Brown, The Making of a Martyr. She once gave me a copy of, and I read it. It blames John Brown on Emerson. And indeed, John Brown and Emerson and Thoreau were all very close. They had raised money for Brown to go off to his bloody work in Lawrence, Kansas. And indeed, in an oration, practically a sermon, preached after the hanging of John Brown, Emerson actually cried out in a great passion, John Brown has made the gallows as glorious as the cross. So let us set the South and the Southwest aside. To this day, the Texans hate Emerson. He would have been delighted. The Southerners hate Emerson. He would have been delighted. But otherwise, the whole phenomenon of American culture on every level, down to popular culture, even with tens of millions of people who've never heard of Emerson, let alone read him, is a profoundly Emersonian affair. He has prophesied everything.
Explain that.
He is the mind of America. He is not only the first absolutely original mind to appear in the United States, but he usurped, I think, everything that could be peculiarly American about thought as such, by which I do not mean philosophy, because he was not interested in being a philosopher.
Hmm.
I mean in terms of the total process of what you might want to call imaginative cognition, Emerson moved in and took over all the space. That is why, for instance, in the generation just after him, you had only two choices. You could either be Emersonian, even if with some descent, like Emily Dickinson, or directly Emersonian, like Whitman and Thoreau, or ostensibly anti-Emersonian, like Hawthorne and Melville. And yet, look at that. Hawthorne's Hester Prynne is a pure Emersonian. Otherwise, the novel would make no sense. Melville twice satirizes Emerson as Plotinus Plinlimon, the Platonic philosopher in Pierre, and then as the confidence man himself. And yet, not only did Melville cover his pages of his personal editions of everything Emerson had written up to the time that Melville died with endless annotations, every time Emerson gave a lecture series in New York City, there was, in fact, Melville in the audience eagerly taking notes. Ahab is a pure Emersonian. In Moby Dick, both Ishmael and Ahab are the purest of Emersonians.
Meaning what, though?
The idea that the best and oldest parts of ourselves, and this is straight Emerson, that the best and oldest parts of ourselves are the God within, is pure Emerson and is pure Gnosticism. I wrote a book called The American Religion. Emerson, indeed, might well be called the theologian of what we should call the American religion, which was my starting point in that book. And in that sense, and he's not actually a theologian any more than he is a philosopher. He's a sage, he's a seer, he's an essayist in Monte, he's a wisdom writer, might perhaps be the best thing to say. But we should never forget that his great work is not even The Conduct of Life, is not even the two series of essays, is not the handful of great poems, is not the occasional great lecture or sermon. His great work are those endless and magnificent notebooks, which really have to be read from the beginning to the end and then back again. I think I've spent a good part of my life, since I was in the middle of the life crisis when I was 35, and partly got myself out of it by literally all day long alternately reading Freud and Emerson, a very strange combination. But on the whole, Emerson has stayed with me better than Freud has. With a curious difference, I must say, the only time in my life that I contracted myself to write a book and just could not write it or ever finish it, it's a yellowing manuscript up in the attic somewhere, was when I was supposed to write a book and had accepted in advance for writing a book called Freud with the subtitle Transference and Authority. But I found myself getting so ambivalent about Freud the more deeply I went that I couldn't write. On the other hand, I've been asked again and again to write a book on Emerson. There must be something about Emerson in every book I've written in my entire life, but I don't think I feel Emerson would not have wanted people to write books about Emerson. In fact, he says so. He says, in effect, do your work and I shall know you. Do your own thing is, in fact, an Emersonian motto before it becomes a motto. And, of course, there is the heart of it again. Our high culture and our counterculture equally can legitimately claim Emerson as ancestor. Even though I have now spent the last 33 years of my life ranting against the cant of the way in which the counterculture has taken over and destroyed intellectual study of literature in our universities, nevertheless, I would have to admit that in his extraordinarily complex and diverse way, Emerson is equally the ancestor of, if on the one hand, Wallace Stevens and Hart Crane, as he had been of Walt Whitman, on the other, alas, 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 of people who I firmly believe, though I was personally fond of them, like Allen Ginsberg, also could not write their way out of a paper bag. Mm. Charming man, Allen, but not a poet. But he would come round and we would discuss Emerson by the hour, and he loved Emerson. I don't think he ever understood what Emerson was talking about, but he had a great love of Emerson. He had Emerson all mixed up with Buddhism in some mad way. But then I can't understand Buddhism, and I've stopped trying.
I'd love you to talk some more about the people who hate Emerson, like Robert Penwarren. I'd love you to sort of let us in on those conversations. And then I also want to talk about people like you, like me, like Stanley Cavell, Richard Rorty, Du Bois, John Dewey, William James, Oliver Wendell Holmes, the judge, who adore that man.
Du Bois, W.E.B., if it were not for that great passage in Emerson about the double consciousness, we would not have gotten Du Bois. His entire theory of what he calls the souls of black folk is the purest Emerson. And to that extent, indeed, Emerson is the direct ancestor of what we now call African-American studies. Emerson, and you can see it happening in his prose, I'm convinced that Emerson, that his mind finally started to go during the Civil War years and afterwards, simply because he hated the South and Southerners as much as he did. Emerson had been a close friend and a fierce supporter of Senator Daniel Webster. He had supported Webster again and again. They were personal friends. When Webster, as part of the Missouri Compromise, voted for the Fugitive Slave Act, all hell broke loose. You wouldn't have thought that Emerson was capable of such hatred, but he allowed Webster to know through third parties that this loathsome creature was not to come into his presence again, and then he gave a magnificent public speech in front of the Massachusetts State House after, under Webster's influence momentarily, though eventually they repealed it, the state of Massachusetts actually voted that the Fugitive Slave Act was to be enforced in Massachusetts. Emerson stood up, and he didn't like this in public, and uttered a sentence. He said, "This filthy law has been enacted in the 19th century by human beings who could read and write. I will not obey it, by God." And, of course, none of the people in Concord or none of the people in Boston were willing to obey it, and eventually they swept that government out, and eventually they got rid of Webster. But I think it was the hatred of the slave driver, it was the hatred of human slavery, which made Emerson an implacable enemy of the South, and the Southerners reciprocated.
The Webster business had to be the touchstone of his contempt for politics, the notion that they could all be bought, that it was just a cheap marketplace.
Well, Webster, he had thought, had integrity, and Webster turned out to be a crook, and indeed had been bought, and they all get bought, and we know that they all get bought. Emerson knew it very well, and we know it very well also, and it is never going to stop, I'm afraid. Look, one reason why I'm passionately, I have broken from all my friends on this, I pray that indeed on September 15th, General Wesley Clark will announce for the presidency that he will get the Democratic nomination as he deserves to, and that he beats the hell off the subhuman creature we now have as President of the United States. But look at politicians. We have all been thinking that there was something to Howard Dean. This current strike at Yale, which keeps going on forever, is being run by a crooked union, the Hotel and Restaurant Employees of America, who are part of the Teamsters, who are totally dominated by the mafia. And I'm not a supporter of the university, I assure you. I have been in dissent from Yale for my whole half century here. But it is disgusting that in successive days, Jesse Jackson, though one would expect nothing else from him, that Joseph Lieberman, a crook from the word go, who used to be in bed when he was Attorney General of Connecticut with the big Hartford Life Insurance Companies. But the final straw is that at this moment, as we are sitting here, Christopher, Howard Dean is down here supporting the strike and the strikers.
Yeah, that's a sorry business. But it's time that Yale figured out how to get along with its working class. I mean, it's been going on for as long as I can remember. And not every university has this chronic problem.
Allow me, Chris, to dissent from you on this.
Okay. I wouldn't. What would Emerson say? Here's what Emerson would say about politics at the end of the essay on Montaigne. He says, "Although knaves win in every political struggle, although society seems to be delivered over from the hands of one set of criminals into the hands of another set of criminals as fast as the government has changed, and the march of civilization is a train of felonies, yet general ends are somehow answered. We see now events forced on which seem to retard or retrograde the civility of ages, but the world spirit is a good swimmer, and storms and waves cannot drown him. He snaps his fingers at laws, and so throughout history heaven seems to affect low and poor means through the years and the centuries, through evil agents, through toys and atoms, a great and beneficent tendency irresistibly streams."
Very powerful. And it's right that it should appear in the essay on Montaigne, who, together with Shakespeare, were the two authors who most deeply affected Emerson.